they treat people like they worth nothing.
Injustice kind of chose me because it brushed against me many times.
It looked like Baltimore had been in a war.
The loss of potential, not simply Freddie Gray, but all those young folks.
And here I am thinking that I'm supposed to be this thug.
A war on drugs is not, it's not a war on drugs anymore. It's a war on us.
But
you know,
they surround
out of Jose, so I'll take it back to the street. They treat people like they worth nothing.
Welcome to the world that brought us Freddie Gray.
A five-part radio documentary produced by students at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County.
In collaboration with Baltimore Traces.
During the past semester, as a part of our UMBC American Studies class, Radio and American Culture, students have worked on The World That Brought Us Freddie Gray, a project to produce a series that highlights the voices of residents of Baltimore City, who have all, in one way or another, been affected by the death of Freddie Gray and the uprising that followed. In this episode, we will examine the unequal race-based application of law in the United States. Applying these observations to Baltimore, we studied how 150 years of racial injustice culminated in the death of Freddie Gray. To understand the legal history of Baltimore, we must first understand U.S. history as a whole. In this piece, you will hear comments from ex-felons, community leaders, local activists, lawyers, and other legal professionals. University of Maryland law professor Doug Colbert provides us with the historical link between emancipation in 1865 and present-day issues.
The 13th Amendment abolished slavery. And it also abolished all of the badges and incidents of slavery. Slavery is supposed to be abolished, but not just the institution. Everything that reinforced the badge of racial inferiority on people of African ancestry. So the badges and incidents are everything that reinforces inferiority. Today's problems are, in my view, inextricably linked to slavery's domination.
Despite the emancipation of slaves, African Americans continue to be disproportionately targeted by the legal system. African Americans make up 28% of Maryland's population, yet they account for 76% of those incarcerated in Maryland state prisons. This statistic is not new. The war on drugs drastically increased racial disparities.
The war on drugs really manifested itself almost in a period simultaneously or very nearly with the riots which flowed after Rodney King, and then 68, the riots that flowed after the assassination of King and Robert Kennedy.
Here is civil rights constitutional and criminal lawyer A. Dwight Pettit.
And so we might be finding that what's happening on the streets of America today is just the tip of the icebergs. But with that war on the drugs, that's when we found out the arming of the civilian police forces and the militarization. A war on drugs is not a war on drugs anymore. It's a war on us.
Building on this assertion, Tara Huffman, a director at Open Society Institute Baltimore, notes.
Somewhere you literally see it flip, where all of a sudden it went from almost 70-something white and about 30% black to the exact opposite. And it's been the exact opposite since then. And when you look back in history about what happened, it was the drug war. It was the drug war flipped the script and just drove the rates of disproportionality through the roof. It was a war on African-American communities and communities of color across the nation, and it just completely changed the face of the criminal justice system.
So Sandtown Winchester has been designated and recognized as the front lines on the war on drugs in Baltimore City for years.
That was former president of No Boundaries Coalition, Ray Kelly, explaining how these wider legal issues have directly impacted local communities.
But the one thing this drug zone, war zone, front line doesn't have is a UN coming in to help out the civilians. They don't have the Red Cross flying in for the casualties. They don't have trauma response for people that are affected by the violence and things like that that come from it. And that we don't have a refugee camp to go to get away from it. So really, we are right on the front lines, and we're just mixed in. We're casualties of war. We just have to deal with it or move.
In Baltimore, the O'Malley administration adopted what's known as broken windows policy. This resulted in a militarized police force that continues to target minority communities. Here is Tara Huffman explaining how this policy plays out in policing.
Under the administration of then Mayor Martin O'Malley, he ran to New York City and adopted a policing strategy known as broken windows theory. And basically, broken windows theory says that if you want to stop crime from becoming very, very serious, you sort of have to begin to deal with what you call little crimes or minor crimes, disorderly conduct, open container, just, you know, little bitty things that can become bigger down the road if you don't stop them. It's called broken windows. Basically, if one window in the neighborhood gets broken, it looks like a blight on the entire neighborhood. And so until you fix that broken window in that neighborhood, people are going to sort of look at that neighborhood as being a little run down, and people don't have respect for a rundown community. So apply that to policing. Police the little crimes and make people stop committing the little crimes, and you can stop the big crimes from happening.
In the year 2000, the Supreme Court decided, in Illinois v. Wardlow, that police have the right to legally pursue a person for fleeing at the sight of officers as long as other suspicious factors existed. Freddie Gray fled from the police in a high-crime area of Sandtown, Winchester. Prior to his death, Freddie Gray was frequently targeted by police. His encounters with our legal system left him financially devastated and permanently marked as a criminal in his own community.
You know, the fact is he was arrested 16 or 17 times, and only two of those charges stuck. The other 15 were dismissed. So that gives him one conviction, because the other one he got was called a probation before judgment. That doesn't count as a conviction. So the guy's 25 years of age, he's got one conviction, but every time he's in the system, there will be a bail for him. And every time there's a bail, he either pays a bail bondsman a non-refundable 10% fee. So if the bail's $5,000, he'll pay $500.
Doug Colbert describes exactly how these monetary problems of incarceration, combined with previous laws and policies, continue to have a direct impact on Baltimore communities today.
It's very important to recognize that the justice that most people receive will often correlate to their economics, to their class, to how much they're able to afford a lawyer. And up until maybe 15 months ago, poor people and low-income people in the state of Maryland did not have legal representation when their freedom was first at stake. Now, that's pretty hard to believe, because 1963, the Supreme Court decided one of its landmark opinions, Gideon versus Wainwright. And Gideon was the first case that established that there's a constitutional right to a lawyer, for poor people when they're accused of a felony crime.
In addition, Perry Hopkins comments.
The overriding of the governor's veto, allowing all ex-felons and all people with criminal records in the community to vote. For many years, they take your money. It's about money again. They take your money and your taxes. They oppress you from just your basic needs of life with no remorse. We needed the ability to vote, to become recognized in their arena, because through the vote we have power. Do you know that somebody with a criminal record can't join his family in public housing? Do you know that the minuscule jobs that a brother can get or sister can get while having a criminal record, he can't get subsidized rent? He can't apply for food stamps? Then they run a farce where they bring an ex-felon out. They allow you into the community. They sell you this dream behind the wall that you'll be able to go out and restart a new life, and they place all these obstacles in your way.
Laws and policies have clearly influenced policing in Baltimore and the communities they serve. The death of Freddie Gray is an unfortunate result of this and symbolizes so many other injustices, both in Baltimore and across the nation. The impact of Freddie's death and the death of many other young black individuals across the country has led to unfinished progress. It is debatable how extensive a difference Freddie Gray's death specifically has made on Baltimore. Gregory Mashburn from Safe Streets Baltimore sees the impact as...
It's brought more hope. It's sad that he had to die, but he's not dying in vain. A lot of opportunities are coming here, and my organization, a lot of organizations are taking it back to the street because a lot of these people don't know that these changes are being made. It's a lot of things happening to inform the communities that these things are in place now so they can go and try to get into them.
On the contrary, Bolton resident Jessica Wyatt is less sure of the impact of Freddie's death.
So I'm still kind of struggling to see how much positive change happened from that incident, but I think what is really positive is it pushed people to think differently, and it pushed people to think about the possibilities that could happen. So change takes a really long time, and I think it's important that people are building the relationships to instill that change. So the situation was uncomfortable. It forced us to have uncomfortable conversations, and how can we take those and take that next step?
Out for Justice board member Nicole Hansen has noticed an impact as well, but on a different level.
The only thing that has changed for me since Freddie Gray is that I have been able to connect with other groups around the city who have been doing some of the same work for years that I just didn't know about. So that is what I gained from the uprising, the ability to connect with other Baltimoreans, other local young activists and organizers that, you know, are doing the same work.
Freddie Gray is a name that we've heard across the country for a year now. People know that he died in police custody, but we need to understand the factors in his life that characterize who we knew to be Freddie Gray. It is no surprise that there was an uproar in Baltimore City last April after years of racial oppression in neighborhoods like Sandtown, Winchester. Our justice system targets black neighborhoods, and when we ignore this phenomenon, we ignore our fellow citizens. It is time to seek structural change in the justice system and listen to those who are directly affected by it. No person is to be left between the cracks. In the words of University of Maryland law professor Doug Colbert, there needs to be equal justice for the poorest of the poor, the richest of the rich, and for everyone in between. Tune in tomorrow at 10 for the next episode of Policing and Police Community Relations in Baltimore.
The World That Brought Us Freddie Gray is a collaboration between UMBC students, the UMBC American Studies Department, Baltimore Traces, and the Center for Emerging Media. Production, research, editing, and voice work for today's segment on the law was done by Darren Cate, Tyler Walsh, Heather Harvey, and Terrell David, with executive production assistance by Mark Steiner, Stephanie Mavronis, and Adam Droneberg. We want to thank the people whose voices were featured in today's episode: Doug Colbert, A. Dwight Pettit, Tara Huffman, Perry Hopkins, Jessica Wyatt, Nicole Hansen, Ray Kelly, and Gregory Mashburn. Today's episode featured the song Be Free by J. Cole. Our theme music is by Mark Gunnery. To podcast this segment or share the series with your friends, please visit steinershow.org. And to learn more about Baltimore Traces, visit baltimoretraces.umbc.edu. Please send us your thoughts on what you heard today at talk@steinershow.org or by tweeting at Mark Steiner. Tune in tomorrow at 10 a.m. on WEAA 88.9 FM for the next episode of The World That Brought Us Freddie Gray. Thanks for listening.